Welcome to Business Owners Radio. Business Owners Radio, where established business owners get the latest insights, strategies, and practices to grow a sustainably profitable business. And now, taking care of business, your hosts, Craig Moen and Shai Gilad.
Welcome to Business Owners Radio, episode 188. Our guest today is Karen Tiber Leland, author of the new book, No Nonsense, Time Management, and founder of Sterling Marketing Group. She is a best-selling author of 9 books, and her clients include Twitter, LinkedIn, Apple, American Express, and Google. Karen is a frequent media expert and has been interviewed by The Today Show, MSNBC, NPR, CNN, and Oprah, as well as speaking engagements at Harvard, Yale, and TEDx. Good morning, Karen. Welcome to Business Owners Radio.
Thank you. I'm so delighted to be here.
Oh, we've been looking forward to this interview. Really love the work that you're doing, and it's going to be a great show. And have to ask, when we're dealing with time management, what led up to all the commitment and determination of time management to write this book?
Well, that's a good question. So, you know, one of the things is here's how I write books. This is my No Nonsense Time Management, my 10th book. Here's how I write all my books. I get to this tipping point where I've got so much information in my head about the topic from either writing I've done or consulting I've done or work I've done on it that I have to get it out of my brain. So pretty much these books end up just being that my brain is just so full of the information, I'm driven to get it out of there.
It's amazing. We're dealing with overload and you're dealing with brain overload. It's an interesting scenario there. So looking at time management, lots of burning issues come to mind as business owners. We're just overwhelmed and with the virus scenario that we're under and so forth. Now it's just, where do we spend our time? And give us some beginning insights of what's going on in our world and what are you seeing?
You know, here's what I think is interesting about the pandemic. I don't think it created situations. It did create some situations for work and time, as much as it sped up some of the things that were a problem anyway, or enhanced some of the things that were a problem anyway. And one of those was how you balance this whole working from home, working at an office. Because even before the pandemic, more and more people were heading towards a lifestyle where they weren't necessarily in the office 5 days a week, 8 hours, 9 hours a day. And so I think one of the things is that people who didn't work at home previous to the pandemic have really had to learn a whole set of new time management skills working from home. So for example, when you're at home, if you have children around the house, young children, then it doesn't matter what you do, you're going to get interrupted. And if the kids are home too, by the way, because they're being homeschooled at this point, because they may not be back at school yet, you know, you're going to have to learn how to deal with interruptions at a whole different level. So that became a time management issue. Things like focus, dealing with interruptions, multitasking, prioritizing, calendar scheduling, all those things have always been an issue, but they became an issue in a different way due to the pandemic.
It's been challenging. And like you're saying, you're being stretched all over and figuring out how do we get through this and yet still be responsive. One of the items in your book talks about the power of completion as that possible first step. And tell me more about that.
You know, I love that part of the book, and I've used that principle for a long time. And it's really this idea that there's a difference between something being complete and something being finished. So let's say you have a big project that has a lot of different aspects to it. And maybe it's got, I'm going to say 20 sub aspects to it, just to make it up, right? So you've got a project, it's got 20 sub tasks to it. What most people do is they don't give themselves any sense of completion or something being finished until they get all 20 of those tasks done. But the problem with that is that a sense of incompletion really robs us of energy. You know, when you complete something, think about even something small. Think about when you take a yellow highlighter and you highlight off an item that you've done, or you check it, or you delete it from a list. You get a certain little, you know, blip of energy. You get a certain little feeling because you've gotten that feeling of completing something. And so really the difference between completing and finishing is when something is complete, you've acknowledged where you are with it. When something's finished, it's just done. It's no longer on your to-do list. And so one of the things I talk to people about, and we talk about in the book, is that it's really important to take those bigger projects and break them down, or chunk them down, as we like to say, into much smaller projects or much smaller to-dos, so that as you do each one, you can check it off and you get this sense then of making progress towards the ultimate objective, but you're not waiting till the end to generate that sense of completion. So that's kind of on the completion side. On the incompletion side, what happens is people don't realize that there's a huge power to incompletion as well. So I'll give you an example. You get up in the morning and you don't make your bed because you're in a rush. Then you go to put on that shirt you want to wear for the Zoom meeting, but you realize it's still at the cleaners and you haven't gotten it back from the cleaners yet. And, you know, that's a problem because what are you going to wear now, right? It's a little bit of energy and a little bit of completion left behind there. And then you go and you sit on your computer and you open your email inbox before the Zoom call and you realize you've got 1,000 emails in there that you need to go through and you haven't brought your email inbox to zero in quite a while. So there's a little bit of incompletion there. And by the time you get on that Zoom call at 9 a.m, you're already exhausted. Because the reality is that when you complete things, it generates or gives you a sense of energy. And when things are left incomplete, it drains you of energy. And I think working from home, especially, people have a lot more incompletion and a lot more incompletion around them.
I love that. I'm a list person myself. And so I always put the most important things at the top of my list for every day. And being able to look at that and feeling that energy boost, as you're saying, really is important. But now let's look at what's at the bottom of the list at the end of the day. I totally understand what you're saying. How do we triage a little bit and look at those items that we didn't get to, or how do we not feel bad?
Well, it's funny because I did a podcast on my own podcast about a month ago called How Magical Thinking is Screwing Up Your To-Do List. And what happened was I had a client who called me, a CEO I've been coaching, and she was saying very much the same thing, which is, I just don't get through my entire to-do list every day and I feel bad. And did it. And I said, look, no one gets through their entire to-do list every day. I don't know one person who's successful, who's running a business that gets through their entire to-do list every day. I said, we have this kind of magical thinking where we're like, I'm going to get through everything on my to-do list. And then we load up on our to-do list with all the things that we think we're going to do that day, which of course we're not, because here's the reality. Everything takes more time than you think it's going to. Everything has more steps to it than you think. And nothing is as easy as it looks. You know, so for example, you say to yourself, oh, I've got to call and make reservations for dinner for, you know, that client meeting next week. Okay, well, you call the restaurant and you think, well, that'll only take 2 minutes. Well, you call the restaurant, they're not answering. So now you have to go on OpenTable. So you go on OpenTable and you make the reservation, but the time you want isn't available. So now you have to find another restaurant. So then it takes time to find the next restaurant. Then you have to go to OpenTable and make that reservation. But something happens and the reservation doesn't have to go through. So then you have to make it again. So what you thought was going to be a little 2 minute nothing item is now taking you 10 minutes. That's just an example, but you could pick almost anything and it's like that. There's almost nothing that we've got on our to-do list that doesn't take much longer and much more effort than we think it's going to, no matter how simple it is. And so people just have an unrealistic way of planning their daily to-do list. So what I tell my clients is, look, do this. Take your to-do list, make as long a to-do list as you want for the day, but star or highlight or circle or underline only the top two or three things you absolutely have to get done that day. And then if anything else gets done on top of that, it's a bonus. Like, sounds a little weird, but lower the bar. Lower the bar for what gets done, because that's all that's going to happen anyway. So lower the bar for what gets done so that you have more of a sense of success at the end of every day.
You know, Karen, I really appreciate and so much love that approach. I have this theory that every item that you put on a to-do list that you don't complete is like committing like a microaggression against
yourself.
Carry this box around of failure all day long. I like the way you shift that, saying like, hey, put 20 items on there, put whatever you want on there, but do that in order to decide which handful of things are going to make or break your success on that day. And if you just think it just Pareto principle kind of terms, right? It makes sense. It's only a handful of things that really move the needle, and getting it out of your brain and then treating that as a normal part of the process, I think is really powerful.
And it is powerful because then, as you said, you're not only not doing microaggressions against yourself. I love that, by the way. I'm going to steal that. You're actually winning. You're actually having an experience of moving forward. And the more you have an experience of moving forward, the more energy you generate. The more energy you generate, the more energy you have to bear on what you're working on. So the more you put to bear on what you're working on, the more efficiently it gets done, which creates more energy. So now instead of being in sort of a negative death spiral, incompletion, you're now in a upward spiral of completion.
Yeah, I like that. And it's interesting the way you talk about this in terms of energy management, right? Because, you know, it's that whole thing around how do you manage time? But I really like your thinking on energy. Tell us more about that.
Well, you know, in the book, Keith and I, my co-author and I, in the No Nonsense Time Management book, we have a dedication, and it's to our friend John Garner, who is an old mentor and friend of ours. He's passed, unfortunately. But years ago, he taught us that you really can't manage time. You can only manage energy. So if you think about it, an hour is an hour is an hour, right? Time is an immutable force. There's only 24 hours in the day. You can't create more than 24 hours in a day. So that's why you can give one person an hour and you can say, hey, see what you can get done. And you give another person that same hour and say, see what you can get done. And one person produces a ton of stuff and another person produces almost nothing. So it isn't the hour that made the difference. It's the way they manage their energy. So it's really not about managing time. It's about managing energy. And it's a hard concept for people to get their head around because we are so driven at work by the management of time. So for example, think about it. This has changed a lot since COVID, but you know, think about it. It's, well, my job is 9 to 5. My hours are this to that. But some people get their job done in less time. Some people take more time. So it really is about managing and watching your levels of energy and how you use time rather than time being the determinant.
You know, there's some real barriers there, especially if you think about how most employers are over 50, right? Statistically.
Right.
And so they're coming from this era of 9 to 5. They're coming from an era of, well, all of us think about just your schooling, right? From grade school, everything is by the clock. And then you get into high school and then it's how long is each class session. And that happens again in college. And then your employer's fabricated constraints.
I think that's true. And I think one of the challenges people have right now, for example, is I'll talk to people and they'll go, I'm spending my entire day on Zoom. Like I'm on Zoom meetings that are hours long. And the problem is it's the same thing. It's like, how effective is that, right? Because we can only focus for a certain amount of time, 100%, and then our brains need a break from that kind of focus. So what happens is when people are on rolling Zoom meetings and there's no break between them, right? So they go Zoom meeting, Zoom meeting, Zoom meeting, Zoom meeting. I always tell people, give yourselves at least 15 minutes between Zoom meetings, because this way your brain has a chance to rest, relax, and you have a chance to refresh your energy. So this whole idea of focus impacts our energy. And we don't have energy to focus if we're burned out. And so we've had a particular problem with people being on Zoom where their energy gets depleted by the end of the day because they're being required to focus in a strange way for long, long periods of time. And it is strange to try to focus. Anyone that's ever been on a video conference knows this. It's very weird to try to focus on a small space with a bunch of different people's faces there. That's just not a natural way that we focus and interact with people.
So Karen, I really appreciate the element of the wall-to-wall Zoom meetings. And I didn't look at it as energy, but I can really see that that fits because you're on guard, you're on performance, you're in front of the screen, it's your showtime type of thing. Even if you're sitting and listening, you have to look engaged at all times. Whereas in a conference room, it's normal that only half of them are totally eye-to-eye engaged at any one time. What's part of our social norm. But with Zoom, it just seems to change and it gets very distracting looking at everybody doing different things or the cat walking by and so forth. Anyway, but speaking of distractions, social media has been growing. And I mentioned in the old days, it was 9 to 5 and there was no social media and there was a lot of things that didn't exist. But today, we have stuff coming in that we didn't even think of years ago, and now it's growing and growing and growing. How do we deal with that?
You know, it's interesting because one of the things about distraction is, well, what causes distraction, right? Well, there's external things cause distraction, but we also have a lot of what we call in the book distraction that's caused by self-interruption, right? So self-interruption involves stopping a task before it's finished or switching your focus to a different task, but you're the one that's done it. So for example, you might be writing down an idea, thought, or a to-do item that you just thought of. So you're in the middle of working on a project, an idea pops into your head, and you stop what you're doing to write down that idea. Or you realize, oh, I've got to buy milk today at the market. So you stop what you're doing to write down, oh, I got to buy milk. or you're looking something up on the internet and you see something else. Most people totally know this one. You're looking one thing up on the internet and you see something else, and then you follow that, and then you follow that, and you follow that. And before you know it, you're down a rabbit hole and you're totally away from the original thing you were working on. Or you're pursuing social media and you get a ping and then you get distracted by the ping. So those are self-interruptions. There was actually a really interesting study done by a woman named Gloria Marks. And she found out in her research that 40% of the time when workers are interrupted, they don't return to their original task, but they basically wander off in a new direction. So it's almost half the time. If we get interrupted by a self-distraction, we will just wander off and never come back to where we were. I think one of the things to realize is that some interruptions we can't help, especially if we're working from home. The cat may wander through. One of our kids may come in. For me, one of the interruptions is, I live in a building in New York, a doorman building in New York, and the doorman, bless them, they're the most wonderful people in the world, but they sometimes try to be helpful and bring a package up. So I could be on a call like this, and they'll come knocking at the door to put a package up. That's an interruption. Don't worry, you guys, that when I do these kind of calls, I put a note on the door saying, do not knock, I'm on the phone. And so I think what happens is those are interruptions by other people, but a lot of our distraction is self-inflicted, where we have this reactive nature where something dings and we turn. It's like that Disney film Up where the dog would go, squirrel, and he would instantly be drawn off track because he'd see a squirrel. And we're like that. And so we have to really train ourselves to be a lot more disciplined in terms of focusing on what we're focusing on, when we're focusing on it, and not getting pulled off. Like, I even see it with myself, by the way. I notice with myself, I'll be working on something and there's this pull to check the email and see what came in, or something will pop up on the computer. And it's really a discipline to train yourself not to do that, because for our brains, even though everyone's like, I'm a great multitasker, the truth is that the research shows that really we're not great multitaskers, and we lose intelligence, actual measurable intelligence, IQ, when we're multitasking like that. So while we can't control all the external interruptions and distractions, there's certainly an amount of it that we do to ourselves that we can control.
Appreciate that. Can you tell me about times when you've worked with many, many, many clients, and on a particular one where you've seen their trends and their improvement over time to be able to better manage their world?
Absolutely. So I have one client, she's a CEO of a nonprofit who I've been coaching and working with on their company brand, but also her personal CEO brand. And of course, one of the issues that always comes up is people's time and how they manage time. And I think she's the one that called me and said, I feel so bad about my to-do list. So I think one of the things is that she started doing that habit of highlighting the two or three most important things for her that day and getting those done. And I think one of the differences that's really made for her, what she reports to me, is one, she feels more of a sense of accomplishment at the end of the day, but she also doesn't feel as disappointed in herself or as upset with herself, which also, by the way, is an energy drain. Because if you add on top of not getting something done, now feeling bad that you didn't get it done and beating yourself up, well, that doesn't help you resolve it and get things done more easily. So I think that's one example that I've seen with her. The second thing with this CEO, besides picking her two to top three things a day, was that she was really noticing she was having trouble with what I call sunken cost. So she would start down the path of working on something, realize at a certain point, this isn't really worth my time, or this particular client I'm working with isn't worth my time, or this isn't working out, or this isn't the right path. But she'd feel like she'd had so much energy and time invested in it anyway, she was afraid to let it go. So when we talked about this idea of sunken cost and like, look, you don't throw good time after bad, you know, she's realized that it was better to just stop and just cut it off then and not invest any more time or effort into it. And so, and from a priority standpoint, I think she's done a much better job of realizing these are my priorities. And if I start down a path and something isn't working and I can't correct it, probably it's good not to just keep going because, well, I've already invested this much time into it. And I think that's another big mistake people make, is they'll have a problem with sunken costs. They'll put all this time and effort into an employee or a project or a customer. And even if it isn't working, they get to this point where they think, well, I've already put so much time into it, but more time doesn't generally make it better. More money, by the way, doesn't generally make it better either. And so I think that was something that she learned that's made a really big difference in how she manages her time.
Yeah, that's a sunk cost is one of those things. I guess that's why they call it sunk cost fallacy, right? That we, you know, it just shows up for us again and again as a bias that prevents us from moving forward. I can't help thinking also about the age that we live in now, the information age, and just a constant onslaught of information, right? All of these channels that are coming at us all the time, social media, email, communications. And I know you have a background in marketing communications. How do you help clients, even like the CEO that you're talking about, how do you help them think about how that fits into their workflow in a way that's more manageable?
Think about how it fits from the point of view of them using it, or think about how it fits from the point of them managing their time around it.
Wow. Yes, I would say.
Both.
I mean, so let's start with how you think about it. Like, where does communication fit in terms of maybe a priority and thinking about these different channels? And then we can move on to the time management. How do you incorporate that?
Yeah, so the bulk of my work is as a branding and marketing strategist. And as you guys know, and doing CEO branding, personal branding, business branding, very private high-end branding services. But the issue of time, of course, as you're saying, always comes up, because it's one thing to have a marketing plan or a branding plan. It's another thing to make the time to do it. You know, you have to make time for marketing and branding. And so the time management issue always comes up. So I always end up coaching and working with people on their time issue, even if it's just as simple as things such as, how do I find the time to do my social media? Because people think, oh, I'm going to do social media. And then they realize, wow, that takes time. You have to make the videos. You have to write the post. You have to put the post in. You have to find the images that go with the post. It isn't just something that you think of doing and it's a no-brainer. So I think one of the things that happens is people get into this fear of missing out. So I had a client call me about a year ago, might have been a year and a half, and she was hysterical. We've got to get on Snapchat. We're not on Snapchat. Everybody's on Snapchat. Snapchat's the hot thing. I'm really concerned we're not on Snapchat. And I said, listen, your market is women between the age of 50 and 65 who are no longer in the workforce. They are not on Snapchat. They might be on Pinterest, but they're not on Snapchat. So there's this reactiveness, right, towards social media, where people think, I've got to do everything, which only increases their to-do list and the things they think they need to do, which may not be effective for them to do. You know, people call me all the time and say, I want to have you work with me to get me more media, or to help me build my brand, or to get me placed on podcasts, or to help me get in TV or newspapers. What I say is, look, I won't ever do that with a client till I sit down and I come up with a marketing and a branding strategy based on what's going to be effective for them. Because in terms of social media or marketing, there's 40 or 50 core activities you could do in marketing and branding. You're not going to do all 40 or 50 because you don't have the time. Most people don't have the time, especially a small business, right? You don't have the time or the money. So you have to really figure out, through a sober research, what two or three of those are really the most efficacious, and then have a plan for how you're actually going to execute them. And this is what's often missing with people when it comes to social, is they don't have a plan for the execution. They have a good idea, but they don't have a plan for the execution, and or they have a good idea, but they have no research to back up. Why is that a good idea? It's funny, because the name of the book I'm working on right now is called No More Drunk Marketing, because I call that drunk marketing. Because what happens is people just go, oh, let's try Facebook ads. But they have no reason to think that the time or the money they invest in that is actually going to pay off. It's just some idea they have, or some consultant told them they should do that, or they read some article and they think they should do that, or, you know, they get pitched by Facebook companies or companies doing Facebook ads on emails. You know, I'm not saying it's a bad thing to do Facebook ads. I'm saying it's not the right thing for everyone. So again, in this new book that I'm writing, it's really that sober approach to marketing that makes a difference. And part of that is how you use your time, because time is a limited commodity. Energy is a limited commodity.
It's so funny. I could just like see this happening in my mind as you're talking about it. And we'll definitely have to have you back on when that next book drops. But this idea that, okay, so you're casually using social media maybe to connect with friends or see what your family is up to, look at pictures. And then all of a sudden you see an advertisement from someone that does something similar to you, or from anybody, right? And you're like, ooh, like you said, you know, your squirrel brain goes, gee, I wonder if I should be running an advertisement on here, right? And then it's almost like you haven't compartmentalized that space to say, when I go in and do this as a person, this is recreation time. And I'm going to budget my time accordingly and try to be conscious of that. And I could see how that just becomes confusion. And I think your clarity around, look, this is a channel. This is a customer acquisition channel like any other. And if your customers aren't there.
Yeah. Why waste your time? And it isn't even just, by the way, that it's a customer acquisition channel. Sometimes it's just a brand building channel. Sure. You may not get a customer of it, but it's something that helps you close a customer. So you want to do it well. I mean, I have literally had people call me and say, hi, I wanted to talk to you about, you know, your branding services. And I'll go, okay, well, where'd you find out about me? Well, I Googled you and I saw you. And then I went and I listened to your podcast. And then I saw some of the blogs you write for Inc. And then I went to your Instagram and I was looking at some of the stuff you do on Instagram. So, you know, my question is, well, which one of those things closed the client? Which one? And my answer is all of them. Sure. Because they all were a touch point. So if I did any one of those poorly, because I wasn't putting the right time into it, if I did any of those poorly or inconsistently, that person might not have ended up calling me on the phone. And since you can't do everything, you know, you can't do all 40 tactics well, you have to pick the ones that are going to work and literally treat them like this is a part of my business development. It's not just something I have to do. It's part of my business development. I need to be strategic, which means setting aside the time for it, which means being realistic about the time it takes, all of that. Again, you see why I call it sober marketing and branding versus drunk marketing and branding, right?
Absolutely. And I have to say, in general, this has been a very sobering conversation today. Because really about energy, which you obviously bring a lot of it to the table. So I know that you're managing it really well. And it's been really inspiring talking to you about this. So before we let you go, I have a few more things I want to ask about. You know, Craig and I are always thinking about, okay, so how do I start right now? You know, I'm struggling. What are a handful of things I can do right now that are sort of those best practice changes I could make?
Well, one thing is create the to-do list for the next day and underline those two or three things that you absolutely have to get done. And if three is too many, make it two. You know, so underline the two or three things and get into the habit of just managing yourself against the two or three things you know need to get done that day. That's number one. Number two is get a timer on your telephone. And there's a million of these apps, right? Get one of those timer apps on your phone that tracks your time when you do a project. And if you've got something really intense that you need to work on that requires focus, set that timer for 15 minutes. And for 15 minutes, don't do anything else. Turn everything else off, except for the phone because you need the timer on it. But turn the caller off, the buzz off. Everything else on the phone, turn off. Turn off the dings on the computer. And for 15 minutes, just focus. So really start to plan focus times in 15-minute increments. And then the third thing is if you have a big project that you're resisting starting because it's overwhelming you, or you're just resisting starting something, chunk it down. Figure out what the little steps are to it and then do those. I'll give you an example for myself. The other day I was watching the news and something came on that really disturbed me and I got distracted from what I was doing and I lost my focus and I had to get my focus back, but I just couldn't manage to do it. And so what I did was I took this really simple thing where I had to just write like a paragraph or two for a client, which is not a big deal. And I literally had to say to myself, okay, Karen, step one, open up the client file on your computer. Great. Step two, find this client. Great. Check. Did that, right? We call those mini accomplishments. I chunked it down. Okay. Step three, find the information you need in that document. Great. Found the information. Check. Step four, copy and paste it to a new Word doc. Great. Check. Step five. Great. Take the first two sentences and rewrite them. This is the degree to which I had to manage myself to get that done. And I'm a very effective, productive person. Obviously, I've written books and I build a company. So it's not like I'm not someone who's capable of getting things done or isn't productive. But my mind was so distracted in that point that I had to break things down into that step. So if you find there's something you're not getting done or you're really distracted, sometimes you literally have to break things down into that sort of one foot in front of the other step to get it done.
Well, Karen, thank you so much for being on our show today.
You know what? It was just a pleasure. And I loved all the questions you asked.
Well, you have tremendous experience and background, so we really appreciate it. And I was wondering, is there anything else you'd like to leave with our audience today?
You know, there's two things. One is I want to let people know, obviously, that I'm sure you're going to tell them, but they can get the book on Amazon, the No Nonsense Time Management book on Amazon. But also, if anyone would like it, I have a one sheet that's just some time management tips, some top time management tips, that if they will go to my website at sterlingmarketinggroup.com, they'll be able to find that tip sheet and use it.
Our guest today has been Karen Tiber-Leland, author of the new book, No Nonsense Time Management, and founder of Sterling Marketing Group. You can learn more about Karen as well as find links to her book, free offer, and website, all at businessownersradio.com.
Thank you for joining us on Business Owners Radio. We hope you enjoyed today's show. As always, you can read more about each episode along with links and offers in the show notes on our website, businessownersradio.com. We want to hear your feedback. Please leave comments on this show or suggestions for upcoming episodes. Tell your fellow business owners about the show, and of course, we would love the stars and comments on iTunes. Till next time, keep taking care of business.